Okay. Okay. If you're hearing this, that means the feed worked. We don't know how long this recording is going to last or if anyone is even supposed to hear it. There was a lot of shouting. Something fell over. Someone yelled something about Fear Factor and the state of American television. So if this cuts out suddenly, just know that we did everything we could. This is a record, a document of not of what happened, but what we experienced. This is the Experience Grind podcast, a record of getting older, watching stuff, and realizing none of that prepared us for this. We're currently trapped in found footage February, a month all about batteries that last longer than humanly possible, and everybody just keeps filming when they should be running. I'm your host this week, Brian, and today we're talking about Cloverfield. And I'm not alone on this tape. Also caught in the blast radius are three other voices. If you're trying to identify them later, good luck. He's giant, he loves Superman, he's made of metal, but he swears he's not a gun. It's Ryan.
I am Superman. It took me a second to get the Iron Giant reference, but fucking well done.
He's man's best friend, but like a much bigger and redder version. It's Kyle.
TJ Miller got arrested for a DUI outside of the bar that I used to play at very frequently in Bloomington, Indiana.
Nice. Finally, he's got springy curls, red overalls, and it's way past his bedtime. He'd be cute if he wasn't destroying Las Vegas. It's Sean. all right, boys. We're talking about Cloverfield this week. Mm-hmm. Has everybody seen Cloverfield before?
Yes. I thought that I had, but it turns out that I hadn't.
That's very exciting for all of us.
I saw this in theaters opening night, left within 20 minutes, went back the very next day, sat further back, watched the whole thing. I got motion sick.
Yeah,
I suffer from it quite terribly, famously, and so sad opening night. I had to leave. And Mandy had to
I feel like home. We will touch upon that more after.
I did That's go back, and I will tell you how I felt about the movie at a later time.
When the appropriate moment has arrived.
For years and years, I thought that I had seen this movie. For years and years, up until tonight. I thought that I had seen this movie. And it turns out that this movie was just so prevalent and everywhere for so long around me that I just assumed and thought that I had seen it this whole time.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
This movie was everywhere, though. Everybody was talking about it. It was had a huge marketing campaign around it.
By osmosis, I had seen it without seeing it.
But yeah, I understand, because when I finally saw it, I was like, oh yeah, I recognize that, but I actually hadn't seen it yet.
When did you see it, Ryan?
Opening night. I was one of those on the message boards really eating up everything. Like, the trailer, like, I don't remember. It was this in, like, the Signs trailer. I remember, like, just spending so much time dissecting frame by frame, beat for beat, like, going over the dialogue. Like, it's huge. It's a lion is what some people thought, and they thought the monster was, like, a giant lion, which then led into, like, this god Voltron. And into the world analogy, or Voltron, which is, like, it was crazy, like, the ways, like, the theories could go. Needless to say, like, I was so hooked. I had to be there opening night, and loved it immediately, bought it as soon as it came out on DVD, and probably been about 10 years since I've seen it, though.
Probably about the same for me, if not a little longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably only been like 5 years since I've seen it, but that would have been my first time seeing it. They did a teaser trailer for this movie on Transformers, which was awesome, because they didn't even put the name of the movie on the screen. They were just a teaser that date. Was insane, and a date. And the rest of that night went a little weird for me, because there's a whole story about me and Transformers that you can actually find. I want to say we did a Beer Me a Movie episode on Transformers, and I recapped my events of that night. But needless to say, this fell off my radar until many years later.
I'm just seeing it not that long ago, Brian. Why did you want to talk about this?
Because Sean talked about found footage last week, and I wanted to continue the trend, and this was one of the ones that was like, that's a movie that's ripe for being talked about.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well,
I also have not seen any of the other Cloverfield Universe movies, so I'm very intrigued to step into that.
Oh, hell yeah. We can keep this going.
I could
going
be into a revisit.
Point.
I famously was not a fan of 10 Cloverfield Lane. It was one of me and Ryan's more contentious episodes.
Hmm. Yep. I love both of them, and they offer something very unique and different.
I think I've maybe come around more on 10 Cloverfield. I think I probably didn't like it. I was expecting something else, and I held that against it. So I would be interested in revisiting it for sure.
It's tough to have a movie like that where you're expecting something completely different, and you can't help but be completely disappointed if it's not that.
Yeah, especially because this one you went into it with absolutely no expectations because there was a mystery what it was going to be. Like, even some of the actors in it did not know what it was going to be until they were handed the script.
Well, that's what was so cool about it, because, like, this was one of those rare times, even, like, pre-big internet, where stuff did not leak. Nobody knew what the monster looked like. And that was the thing I was so excited about going to, like, opening. I wanted to see this fucking thing. I love monsters. I love monster design. This was a new one. Everybody's hyping it up. I wanted to see this shit. I was so sad I couldn't see it that night. That's why I had to go the next day, because I got to see that fucking monster. So,
which is a cool era. It's so wild considering, like, the monster's all over this fucking movie. Like, way more than I thought that it would be, considering I had, through the years, you know, I'd consumed so much about this movie. You know, to the point where I thought I had seen it, that I thought I had seen in multiple different places that they're like, oh, yeah, it's purposely obscured here. You don't really get a clear shot, blah, blah. It's like that motherfucker is taking up your screen for such a large majority of this movie. And that's not a complaint. It's just my expectations were much different.
I think
different.
He only has like a minute and a half of screen
time. I was going to say, just really quick, my counterpoint was watching it this time. I was like, man, I can't believe how little this thing is actually in the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Even if it's just like quick flashes, it just seemed like because it's such a large presence that it just felt
like.
Yeah,
I think that's really what it is. It's a minute and a half of quick flashes here and there. Mm-hmm. They're spread out pretty well. Well distributed. Great. Anyway, let me get into a little synopsis for you, boys.
Hell yeah. Synops away, baby.
A farewell party in Manhattan doubles as a romantic train wreck, with Rob about to move to Japan, Beth showing up with a new guy, and HUD immediately using his camera to make everything worse. Also, he's accidentally taping over Rob and Beth's very cute Coney Island date, which will now haunt us forever. An earthquake interrupts the party, everyone runs to the roof, and New York City instantly gets wrecked by something enormous. Debris rains down, panic erupts, and the severed head of the Statue of Liberty crashes into the street like America just rage quit. Rob, HUD, Jason, Lily, and Marlena flee the city, catching a glimpse of the monster and deciding the Brooklyn Bridge is a great escape route, until the monster's tail shows up and turns the bridge into a mass casualty highlight reel. Jason dies, which shifts the vibe from chaos fun to emotional devastation real fast. Rob hears Beth is trapped in her apartment and decides to go back, because love makes you do incredibly stupid things during kaiju attacks. Along the way, the group encounters the military, spider-like parasites falling off of the monster, and the sudden realization that Manhattan is being written off as collateral damage. Inside a department store-turned-field hospital, Marlena reveals she's been bitten by one of the parasites and is immediately taken behind a curtain where she explodes in one of the movie's most upsetting "don't worry, she'll be fine" moments. The survivors are warned that the hammer down protocol will level the city at dawn. Rob and his friends rescue Beth, escape in a helicopter, crash in Central Park, and realize the hammer down is imminent, just in time for the monster to kill HUD, roar triumphantly, and loom in the background as Rob and Beth record their final messages under a bridge. The footage ends, the bombs fall, love is declared, and a final Coney Island flashback hints that the whole nightmare may have started with something splashing into the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good synopsis.
Let's give this thing a score. We'll start off with the story, and I am curious to hear Sean's take on it as a first-time viewer.
Oh, man. This is so hard because this is one of those... This is one of those I enjoy the movie the less I think about the story kind of movies. Because I don't know, like all of those friends deserve to die. Like you get to a certain point in this movie and it's like you made your choice and I don't care what happens to you at this point. You know, the story's very vague in terms of the overall thing. Like, what is it? No idea. Where'd it come from? No idea. What's happening? No idea. It's they're huffing it to save Beth and they all die. I don't know. I think the tension and the way that it's shot and the visuals paint a much better picture than what's going on. I'm not blown away by it. It was a good delivery method of what I'm seeing, but not enough for me to give it more than a... Honestly, I was going to say a 3, but I don't know if even... That might be too high. I'm not going to be mean, though. Yeah, no, I'm going to be mean. It's a 2. And I want to hear from Ryan.
I don't think the story is the strongest part of this movie. It is a mystery box. It's a J.J. Abrams production, and it is what he does, which is like give you little bits of clues and keeps you interested because you don't know, but you want to know more. And it works best in that kind of sense. It's a movie that doesn't, I think, work nearly as well in subsequent like views because of that. But I do think what they have here is serviceable and it works. And I do think the characters are a bit one-dimensional flat. We'll get into the characters. Sorry, my mistake. Hold on that. I think the story is serviceable. Martin Scorsese rants about like Marvel movies being roller coaster rides. I think Cloverfield is the perfect kind of cinematic roller coaster ride. And I don't mean that disparagingly. I think this movie is perfectly honed to do what it does, which is move at an exceptional clip, give you just enough to know what's going on, but not know everything to keep you like kind of like panicked and concerned and worried as if you were like kind of in the middle of a big disaster like 9/11. And I think this is where the movie, and I don't know if this goes in style or in story, but I think the story is simple and pared down and it mirrors Godzilla almost perfectly. And it does what Godzilla did for Hiroshima and all this shit for New York and for 9/11 for us. And it contextualizes it in a similar way. But that said, it is also kind of like a carbon copy of Godzilla. It is just American Godzilla. Like what it does, like it does the same thematic symbolization of the kaiju as like this horrific event that Japan did like 60 years ago. So it's not like that clever, but for some reason it did hit at the right time and it really meant something at that moment. So I'm more positive on it. I was always going to be at least a 3. My back and forth is if is it a 3 or a 4. And I'm still not super sure on this one. So maybe Brian or Kyle can talk me up, but I'm gonna go with a very high 3, because again, serviceable, it's not the highlight of the movie, and that's fine, and that is completely fine, but I'm hoping Papa Brian can talk me up, because I think he might.
Maybe, I don't know. I think Sean has something to say first, though.
I think I'd be remiss to also jump in and say like the world building in this movie, though, is absolutely fantastic. And I don't know if would you guys put that into story here?
Yeah,
just the world building. OK, so in that immediately boosts this up for me. Like I think the the script story, not a home run. But the world building in this is incredible. And for that, I will bump my score up to a hearty three. A hearty three.
I think that's fair. I don't know if I'm going to be able to talk Ryan up as much as he's expecting me to. I agree that the story is not the strong suit of this movie. That said, it's not supposed to be. Unless you're looking at the story from the point of view of Rob is going to get Beth, and there just happens to be a kaiju destroying New York City while that's happening. In which case, what a crazy story about a trip to your ex-girlfriend's house or your situationship's house apartment in Midtown. I mean, it's hard to say what the story is trying to be because the way this was marketed was very mysterious. It is a mystery box, and you'd never really get the solution to the mystery in this movie. In fact, the very end of this movie has a clip that, when played backwards, says it's still alive. So, like, you don't know how the outcome of this movie. You don't know if anybody survived. I mean, it's pretty well believed that everybody dies, except maybe Lily, who gets on that first helicopter. She might have gotten out, but we really don't know her fate. But everybody else dead. Maybe Jason survives the Brooklyn Bridge collapse, but highly doubtful. But our main character's definitely dead. I mean, we see TJ Miller get chewed in half, which, love that. That's
satisfying.
That's phenomenal. Actually, one of my favorite reviews that I saw of this movie was a 3.5-star review on Letterboxd that just says, the best part of this movie is when TJ Miller shuts the fuck up. That's it. The story, yeah. It's what it is. It's very simple. They're like, hey, here comes a monster. Get to safety. Or don't. Fuck if I know. I don't know. This is New York City. We're trying to evacuate Manhattan in like a few hours. We can't keep track of everybody. Yeah, three. And I would like to hear from Kyle. Maybe he could talk us all up.
So, I'll start by saying, I am including all of the Cloverfield extended mythos into my analysis of the story. I will say with that, it's hard to not give this the bonus point for me. I fucking love everything about this. I think this was the first thing I saw that presented the found footage as evidence of the government.
Pretty cool.
So the way that it's contained and presented makes complete and total sense, and why it's all fractured because it's been blown the fuck up and it's an SD card recovered from a crumbled bridge. I love all of the extended universe stuff that the creature is actually from the deep sea, like so deep, and it's a different type of thing from that, and that explains why it's so hardy and able to withstand so much damage is because it's such hardened from all of the intense pressures it lives under. That also explains the weird parasites that it has on it. Those are a lot of things common down there. My favorite explanation about the creature, though, is the fact that this thing is a baby. This is not the full-grown one. And that does so much to kind of give almost context to this rampage through the city, because it's a scared puppy being shot at and attacked, just trying to get away in any way that it can. I've got another thing I'll talk about on that in style in a bit, but I love everything about this. I love the way that this is part of a story of a whole. And I think even in that context, it works. It's giving us these fragments of like an overall investigation from a government entity. Like, we don't have all parts of it. This is the part that we're seeing. And I don't know. It just, so much of that just works for me in the mystery level and everything on full out a 5. And I don't know if I'll come back and give a bonus at some point, but I think this nails so much of everything that I love. But again, I'm also including, and I'm being gratuitous, but.
Was this thing not from space? Wasn't that the whole thing at the end?
And that is actually a satellite that is owned and operated by the company in Japan that Rob is going to work for that crashes at a part in the alternate reality game, and that falls into the ocean and disturbs this creature, and that's actually what wakes it up.
Oh. There's, I mean, when you take into account the whole world building, like Sean came back to after, I'm going to do the same thing now, I'm going to come back to the world building. This thing is, it's insane, the amount of thought that went into the creature and the world around it. And it's, I understand why it's not actually in the movie and how these people would not be experiencing that backstory. And I kind of actually respect that a little bit. And I think I'm going to bump mine up to a 4. Wow. Because it is absolutely presented as government evidence. And this is the, it's like the best view they get of the monster from people on the ground that day from this recovered footage. So of course that would be within the government files. It makes sense. And it just happens to be a fun story surrounding it. And I actually dig that.
It is, but so much of that is things that you have to gain from other movies.
It is the snapshot.
There is some bleed over in style too, which I'm not sure how much of this, it's presented, is necessarily the story. So I don't know. I think I'm going to stick at a strong 3 myself.
Same. That's fair. We will move on to characters. And I think I'm going to have Kyle lead this one off.
Alrighty. I think we'll maybe be a little more in line here, although I am going to tweak it a bit in a favor. Overall, I think you guys nailed this a lot in the story. The characters are kind of one-dimensional, I think, is unfair. I think we get such a small snapshot of their life. They don't really have much time for character development. They are under attack by a giant beast and running for their life for a majority of this very short 1 hour, 12 minute runtime. That said, I think it's serviceable enough. You get enough of the context. And I think I'm different from Sean. I don't hate these characters to the point that I want them to die. I'm emotionally invested in Rob trying to be the hero and save Beth. I do think it's a little ridiculous that everybody else tags along. However, it's story, suspension of disbelief. There's already a giant monster cruising through the town. Okay, friends go save friends. But they are still very sort of flat. So there, I'm a 3. But again, I am going to count the monster as a character and bump this up to a 4. Don't care. That's what I'm doing. Ryan hates it so much. So Ryan, please talk to me.
The monster's not a character, so I don't think it even counts in this. Like, it's a fine antagonist because it looks fucking cool. That's what I like. Fucking it. So again, that's more style. If we're talking characters, I don't know. Kyle giving it a 4.
I'll give you that.
Now I'm coming hot. Nope. We're not going to put this genie back in the bottle. Characters are 2. They're not good. They are one-dimensional. I will give them the bump of, like, you don't need characters in this movie because it's a thrill ride. It's a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. They're not important. The only character that has an arc is maybe Rob, maybe, because he wants something out of the situationship, and that's it. None of the characters have an arc outside of that. And we spend a lot of time with HUD. We spend a lot of time with these other characters for them to not really have arcs. I don't think they're very well defined. I think they're just kind of filler. And it's fine because they're set dressing. But they are not good characters. And this should not be positive. This is a 2. Brian, I think you're going to bounce me out. So Please do that.
I'm somewhere in the middle of you two, which is actually a wide range, it seems. Man, I'm kind of in agreement with Ryan a little more on this one. I think they are a little one-dimensional. I mean, the fact that we barely get a reaction from Rob about his brother dying until his mom calls, and that's when we get like the breakdown. But at that point, he's already decided, like, he's completely forgotten what's going on. He's one track mind. I need to go save Beth. And I understand in a kaiju attack on New York City, you're probably a little distracted and in survival mode and running on adrenaline. But like, to have no immediate reaction to your brother getting tail slapped into the off the bridge, I don't know. It's Beth is another one who like seems kind of one-dimensional. She is. We get little glimpses of her in the footage from their Coney Island date, and then we have what we see at the party. And there's nothing there that makes me go, okay, I see why Rob is trying to stay alive or rescue her instead of getting the hell out of Manhattan. I'm not as hard on it as Ryan. I'm going to go right in the middle with a 3.
Hard on.
I think they're not as important to the film as a whole, so it doesn't matter that as much that they are one-dimensional. And they do a good enough job of at least having a reason for them to keep the camera on, which is like the bare minimum you have to do in a found footage movie. So 3 for me. Bring it home, Sean.
I want to respond to a couple of things here. One, I did not want these characters to die. I want to specify I didn't want these characters to die.
I just didn't care when they did.
Yeah, there's a point where you're like, you're fucking stupid. If you die, you die. Like,
yes.
You have, there's a point where I don't care about anything you choose anymore because you are actively making the wrong, stupid decision. And when he is blindly going to get his, I don't know, the woman he loves from being skewered out of a 45th floor of a building that's leaning on another building. And coincidentally, right down the street, there's the army right there. And he's like, no, you go, just escape. And the friends are like, oh, no, we're going to come with you. It's like, okay, you all are going to get it and I'm not going to care. You are stupid, which goes into the characters here. Yes, they're one-dimensional. 2, did I need more from them? No, because at the party, I could tell the archetype of every character. Like, I knew who everybody was. I didn't need a ton of depth because they didn't need it. You could just tell from the dialogue kind of who was to each other. And that's cool. That is the base of what I want in something. I can understand who they are and who they are to each other. I think they are stupid and badly written.
The only person who did the right thing was Travis. He went home after the party.
Yeah. Also, this fucking alien, that was not even its tail that hit the bridge. It was just a random ass tentacle. It has a beaver tail.
No, it has a split tail.
Okay. I am going to find it. That motherfucker has a beaver tail.
I promise you, Kyle has spent more time looking at this creature than any of us combined.
Come on, dog.
Well,
now there was an early was concept wrong. Where it had sort of a killer whale vibe, and it did have more of a flat dorsal type tail. But no, it has a.
There was a scene tail. Where it is there. It spins, and it is a flat tail. Yes. Okay. Anyways,
it does have a large base, but it splits in two. Go ahead.
Because I was like, that's weird. That's different than what hit the bridge. Anyways, I don't know. Fucking the best part of the movie is when fucking TJ dies. Like, man, once I saw that he was in this movie, I was like, oh, okay. And then he does a bunch of creepy video shots. I'm like, oh, okay. Checks out. Anyways, so.
That tracks.
2. I'll give, man, 2 seems gross. 2. 2's fine.
Sean did bring
also,
up something.
Also, isn't
there.
Project Hammer a fucking nuke? Isn't that where they nuke the city?
They never specify what the they hammer down truly is.
Like, I would assume typically,
it's a nuke. Because there is a theory that used to be Central Park.
Yeah. And yeah. Also, the name of the movie, Cloverfield. Clovers are the first thing that grow back after a nuclear strike.
Though yeah,
that is not
SD
why the
not
movie
surviving
is
that.
Named that.
That's the first
it
thing
just
that
happens
of.
To be. Yeah.
Yeah. SD card's not surviving that. Anyways, that's in story. I'm back down to a one in story.
Just but that's the other, like, if it is a nuke, if it is a nuke, there you would more likely be right because a nuclear blast is also a giant EMP, which fries all electrical devices. So I would think an SD card and a camera would be completely fried.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it was just a massively humongous bomb.
Right.
I mean.
Yeah, you're not going to have a massively humongous bomb that destroys all of New York City without it being a nuke. So I think it was just an oversight. But anyways, back to you.
Sean did mention something in there about the 45th floor of that tower, yeah. That leaning tower against the other skyscraper. And it actually makes me want to go back to story and lower to a 3 because they do not seem tired enough after going up 50 flights and then going
right?
over to the other. We're just going to hoof it up 50 flights of stairs and then just, you know, cross over to this other building, go down, get her, come back up, then go back down the stairs. But it's cool. We're not winded or nothing.
Not to mention, she was stabbed like, okay, maybe not through the heart, but literally right next to her heart, through her body with iron rebar. And they're just like, let's just lift her off of here.
She
can
pick her up.
She can go down all 50 flights. It's all good. And then she gets to a point where she was
jogging. She's leaning on him.
Adrenaline, Sean.
Yeah.
It's true. It's like lifting the car off your baby. Except you know, this time the baby was in the rebar.
It's so funny because typically, I mentioned it last week. Typically, a thing that angers me in these movies is my issue with why are you recording this? Like, what are you doing? This movie did a very good job of like hammering home why they were doing that.
Mm-hmm,
but man, there was just such little stupid things in here where I'm like, why is she running now? Like that, I like, like it's a kaiju in your. This is what's making me my suspension of disbelief go wonky. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What the
all
fuck?
Right, well, why don't we move on to style? And now this is where I think we're gonna get some big boy numbers because. At least personally.
Leading the witness.
Yeah, that you're not wrong, but I don't give a fuck. I'm going to lead all I want. I'm going 5 on style, boys, because this movie, this is probably one of the best found footage movies ever done. And the way they shot this thing with like, they only had a few days in New York City and everything else is sound stages in LA. And they did such a good job of making it seamless. And I mean, there are things they did with this that just, I mean, the hiding of the kaiju as much as they did, and then you get that reveal at the end, and it's just the head of the Statue of Liberty flying down the street. There are so many cool stylistic choices they did. They even increased the size of the head because people all think that it's bigger than it is. So mm-hmm. The size of the Statue of Liberty head is like 50% larger than it actually is in real life because people would see it and be like, that's not accurate. So they had to make it fake to make people believe. That's just some silly human stuff. But
dude, that's
it's always cool when you find that out.
Yeah. Neville Page was the creature designer on this. And this baby squid monster from the deep is just so freaking cool and so threatening and just ever present. They never get far enough away from it for it to not be a threat. And then you add in these tiny parasites, too, that make you explode if they bite you. Dude. I'm loving it. The choice to not have any music, no score in the movie, except for the diegetic sound you get in the party scene at the beginning. And then just for flavor in the credits, you're going to throw in a Michael Giacchino Godzilla homage. Yeah, I'm in. I'm fully in. This is a 5. And I would like to hear from Kyle.
First up, the reason that the parasites make you explode when they bite you, do you know why?
I would love to know why.
So it's because they exude what is called seabed nectar, which is the secret ingredient in Slusho. And it's such a concentrated version from their bite that it causes your abdomen to literally explode. And that's why you see the first dude explodes from his stomach out, and Marlena, she swells up like a balloon. So it's the magical ingredient in Slusho.
Yum.
Boy, I'm going to ask permission, boys. Can I give a bonus point? Can I go
yes,
six?
Yes, you may.
100%. It's a six. I love, again, every single aspect about this movie is it grabbed something in me deep. The style, we get to see so little of the monster and so little of what it does is so fucking, like, it's hard to say realistic, but there is this one shot where they're bringing in the B-2 bomber and they carpet bomb on it and it drops like the string of bombs up its back. And when falls, it like reaches up and grabs this fucking skyscraper and you see its hand come down and just, God, that fucking shot is burned in my mind. It's so fucking cool looking. And just, I don't know, it felt so fucking real. That's the craziest part about this movie. Like, I mean, obviously we did have 9/11 not long before this with tons of like footage that this heavily is inspired by, but that's the crazy thing is how realistic so much of it like feels. Like when they're in the subway and you hear like the battle raging and like the shit shake, like it's, you just hear the monster out there and you know it's fucking shit up. I don't know, when they come downstairs and they see like they haven't seen the monster yet and they see like the finger scratches through the buildings on like the corner. I don't know. It's just, goddamn. I could literally go on and on about the world, the monster design, all of the cool things with it. I love the way it works, its gills. The one thing, though, for an amphibious monster, this thing does not look like it spends its life in the ocean. Where are the webbed feet? I don't know how it propels under there. Does it just crawl across the bottom?
I've looked up this monster. It is absolutely like a beaver tail that at the end splits into three little tentacles. So that's how it propels, because it's got that big, flat, wide.
The big tail?
Yeah, and it goes whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. That's where all
it's got the head gills that breathe in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That part was sick, too. Yeah, I do. The part where it bites. Have we ever had another movie where we get a first-person view of getting bitten in half? I don't think so.
No, to my knowledge,
good from inside the monster's mouth. I love that the one girl's just like, it was eating people. It was just eating people.
Yeah, Marlena. Ah! Yeah,
so much of it just hits you, man. Six, and Sean, you go. Yu-Gi-Oh,
man, you guys hit like Brian so perfectly said, Kyle perfectly added to. I am not going into this trying to be I'm deducting points for this, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the change in how it's shot about 20, 25 minutes in and how stark of a difference that is, where it goes from very handheld camcorder, like even visually with there's lines on it and stuff, to a very crisp handheld thing about 20, 25 minutes in. I really wish they just picked one and stuck to it, because you do have that very found footagey look to it in the first third. And then the last two thirds are very clean, like Hollywood looking handheld movie. That it's just, it was like a tale of two different visuals, and I get why it changed. Like the beginning was very, very motion sick, like inducing. Like I remember Sarah being like, I'm not having a good time watching this, or something along those lines. And I completely got it because it was very frenetic and like, And it does, it is much easier to watch in the second two thirds, but it's really weird when you hit that transition point and it's just like, it's almost like when you come out of, in a video game, come out of a, like a full motion or a cinematic, but it like goes into you playing it. It was almost like that kind of transition that was very, I don't know.
You could feel
I didn't really
yeah.
like it. And this is still a long way of me saying five, but I do want to just kind of highlight that, because even with that, I love the style of this. Love it. But that was something that I did kind of have an issue with. And I'll send it to Ryan.
Five. There's nothing to say. I love the style. Style is where this movie really succeeds. Everybody has kind of said it at this point. So there's not much to harp on. So, yeah, five.
Hell yeah. Sounds good. Why don't you lead us off with entertainment value then?
I think this is another strong one. I'm also going to go with five on this. I think it's, again, I keep saying roller coaster ride. It is perfectly paced. The set pieces, all of the character stuff is at the very beginning. So even if you have an issue with the characters, it's done with in the first 20 minutes. And then you have so many set pieces and so many really clever set pieces for what is a, essentially like a pretty low budget movie. Like this, this is remarkable how much this moves, man. This is what got me like into like the Abrams mystery box, because I do think they really did a great job of selling an idea and then marketing on like just how much of a mystery it is. That's a super fucking vague thing to say. I really wish I had a better phrasing of that, but I just, I'm completely enraptured by all of this. I think it did really well in the box office for being such like a low budget movie. As Sean and Brian pointed out earlier, people were talking about this. This was like kind of an event movie, which makes me happy to hear. This is the kind of movie that deserves to be an event movie. And I honestly think it probably works best as an event movie. So I'm happy that Sean coming into it nowadays had a good experience with it and wasn't like part of the zeitgeist when it was released and wasn't wrapped up in all of the ARG stuff. And he still had like a great time. I love hearing that. Yeah, this is a greatly entertaining movie. 5 out of 5. Sean.
I don't know how much more I can add to that. It is, for me, 5 in terms of entertainment. A big thing for me, especially in something that's kind of a franchise kind of thing. I think they're even, aren't they looking at possibly doing another one? I thought I had seen something.
There's rumors of a fourth one swirling around.
Yeah. So, and here we are almost 20 years later. They're looking to do a fourth one, and I'm sitting here scratching to watch the second one and third one, and I think there's a show, maybe. I don't know.
Cloverfield Paradox is the third movie.
Okay, that's the on the moon or something one.
It's on a space station.
I'm itching to watch those because I had so much fun with this, and I just want to know more and see more. Even if, you know, the second one's wildly different, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. I had so much fun that it's pushing me to want to watch those other ones, even though I'm 17 years removed from this first one and 10 years removed from the second one. Like, I'm just like, let's go. Load it up. So, yeah, 5. Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, hard to believe that, like, all the scenes of the monster, they just like, you know, digitally replaced John Goodman, who was the monster in Cloverfield. No.
Oh, now you're tying together the second movie. Here we go. Thank you.
That was for you. I'll give you the entertainment value by giving you some more of the background and the arc. The reason Rob has the job is the previous guy that had the job had disappeared under mysterious circumstances. After trying to warn his daughter about the additive seabed nectar in Slusho, and was releasing to her a lot of their internal testing documents of like people dying from their abdomens exploding from drinking too much slusho because of the seabed nectar. And he
just like disappeared. Panera had the caffeinated lemonades.
And that's why Rob had the job opening. All that to say, entertainment value, like you guys said, absolute roller coaster zips along. 1 hour, 12 minutes. Bada boom, that's a 5, baby. Bright guy.
Absolutely 5. This is a, 80 minutes before credits. And that is the exact time on a mini DV tape. So honestly, perfectly done. And
I can God,
once you, like Ryan said, once you get past the opening party scene where you get to know everybody and you learn about the characters, it is nonstop edge of the seat, set piece after set piece, all the way to the end of the movie. And it is so much goddamn fun. This movie made like 690% of its budget back at the box office. Absolutely insane. God, it made like $172 million on a $25 million budget. So it's obvious why they continued to make more within this universe. It's a 5. It's a 5 for entertainment value. And you'd be crazy to not give it a 5. And while it may not have as good rewatchability as it does that first time, it's still a hell of an enjoyable time. So, yeah. And that means our final category is direction. And I'm going to have Kyle lead this one off.
Well, it's weird. You know, I think it's all things considered, barring in like we have done, I think we gave mad praise to Kyle Nuechek on the budgets and what he did and the return he got for Happy Gilmore 2.
Happy Gilmore.
I think when you mentioned those numbers, man, adding the already, I imagine, difficult. I think making a movie is hard. I feel making a found footage movie got to be even harder because to the, you got to make it believable. It's got to work even in a crazy, more realistic way. Like, I don't know if it aids the suspension of disbelief or makes it more difficult to get through because it's more based in realism. But this movie, you forget that you're like, dude, when they're on the street and the fucking thing is walking by roaring at the camera, you're fucking there, man. And again, to add, but I don't know, man, it's 5 for me. Maybe that's generous, but good Lord, nailed every aspect of this. Brian?
I'm right there with you. I think this is a masterclass on found footage movies. And like you said, I don't know if it's harder or easier to suspend disbelief when you're doing a found footage film, but it doesn't matter with this one because it is very real. And I don't know if it's because we were so ingrained in footage from 9/11 after that happened for like the 7 years leading up to this movie, but just everything about when they first go out onto the street after that initial attack, I was immediately transported back to those images from, you know, geez, almost 30 years ago now. It's insane. And this, you get an actual visceral reaction to some of the scenes in this movie. It's just so well done. And on such a small budget, and small comparatively to, you know, your Hollywood blockbusters of the time. $25 million is not a small amount of money. And it helps to have friends in J.J. Abrams and Steven Spielberg making notes on your movie. But
this was also a January release too, I believe, right? Not a summer?
That's right.
Which is also insane. It pulled those numbers in fucking January.
In January, when Hollywood drops its slop on your table. Well, it's award season. Nobody's paying attention to what's new. So, yeah, this did absolute numbers worldwide, $172 million. It's a 5 for me. And I would like to hear from Sean.
Man, it's... I hadn't even really thought about it when you guys were talking about 9/11, but something you had just said, like, you're so right. Like, when the first attack, when they're on the streets and a building comes down and you just see the dust coming in, all I could think of was a tower coming down and how you just saw dust rumbling in, and like they ran into the thing, shut the door, and my mind was trying to process what was going to happen based on what I remembered from 30 years ago of something, you know, what that wasn't too far removed from this movie coming back. And that is immediately where my mind went. And it's just like such a horrifying connection to that this just makes you have. I think everything that he did here is fantastic. I really nailed home. I didn't give a fuck if these characters died. But here's the thing is when they did or when something happened, it was so entertaining because of the way that it was shot. Like the use of tension and the capabilities of the video camera, whether it be using the flashlight on it, using the night mode, you know, as soon as he's like, oh, use the night vision on it.
You're like, oh, yeah, fuck. Baby.
Like, fuck, mm-hmm. You know.
What is out there?
There. Yeah. Yeah, and you know what's there. And it's just like, even when it was there, like, I think it took Sarah like 2 seconds to process what she was seeing. But she was like, whoa! And I was just like, yup. Felt on the inside. And it was just masterful the way that this was shot. And I think he did an incredible job. That kind of money on this budget. And I was also thinking, Paranormal Activity came out 1 year prior to this, mm-hmm. which I think really rejuvenated that found footage.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing. And so this is when it wasn't when the market was too oversaturated with it. But, you know, as soon as Paranormal hit, everybody and their brother was going to be trying to be doing a found footage thing. And this one, he just did an absolute killer job in a different way. And five, Ryan, take us home. Or Brian.
I just wanted to make a note, just because I thought it was absolutely brilliant. When there's no music happening in this movie, because it wouldn't make sense in a found footage film, they still found a way to use the groans of buildings and the hums of fluorescent lights to mark when a big event was about to happen and raise the tension. And that's just good filmmaking. And it's another reason why I went with a five. And yeah, I know we've already used our bonus point on this episode, but goddamn. Anyway, take it away, Ryan.
I'm not sad that the bonus point was used in style, but I could also see it being used in director because, though this is not my favorite Matt Reeves movie, it is goddamn a clear and present mission statement of his directorial style and tone and attitude. This was, I think, his first feature-length movie, and goddamn what a first feature-length movie. Yeah, I'm not going to bury the lead. I'm a five as well. I think he did a masterful job here. I love Matt Reeves. This movie put him on my radar, and I've followed every movie since. There's not been a Matt Reeves movie I have not watched. I think he always picks very interesting things that will challenge him. He picks things that are not easy. You could say remaking Godzilla into an American version is not easy, but goddammit, he did it, and he did it successfully. This is a better Godzilla remake than that Matthew Broderick shit. This is so fucking good. This is better than any of the, is it Gareth Edwards? Godzilla Monsterverse with King Kong nowadays. Mm-hmm. This is better than any of those fucking movies. And some of them I really kind of enjoy guiltily, but this is still fucking better. He just does an amazing job with handling a lot of different elements. And as Brian pointed out, without the use of scores and without these things that like really make the job easier, he restrained himself and was still able to pull it off. What a fucking director. Absolutely a five.
Hell yeah. Well, that is the end of our scoring. So we have a final score for Cloverfield. But before I tell you what it is, Rotten Tomatoes, 78% critical, 68% audience, 7 on IMDb, 64% on Metacritic, and a 3.4 on Letterboxd. So this is like solidly in the high 60s, 70s area, We gave it an 86, and I think we're right. I think everybody else is wrong.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's wow. Especially the audience on Rotten Tomatoes being 68 is very
surprising. I'm very surprised. Yeah. Between that, and I actually expected Letterboxd to be higher.
I would bet a lot of those negatives are for the camera making them sick.
I believe that the shaky cam did not help, and maybe with more modern viewers, the TJ Miller of it all probably didn't help either.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Which does.
Also, in Rotten Tomatoes, is that going off of like when it came out too? Because I could also see people being all like, another fan.
I think
it
updates as more people review it, but you don't, especially critically, you're not going to have many people reviewing it much later.
Okay. I can see some biases, but yeah, I think we're a bit more in line with that. That's crazy to me. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Especially watching it this many years later and it's still being that fucking rad of a movie.
And now I'm just jonesing to dive into this universe more.
Dude, as stupid as that building leaning on the other building was,
I love that. That
was fucking cool as hell. That was cool as shit, man.
So I also really like the idea of having to lift somebody off a rebar, as silly as it is. It's a visceral fucking scene.
And also, in that instance, you want to leave that thing in there because it's probably preventing the bleeding. As soon as they pulled her off, man, she was just losing all that blood. That's the worst thing you can do, man.
She spilled more blood than Marlena after quarantine.
Jesus Christ. You know, I think in any other situation, that is literally the worst thing that you can do. But having watched this movie, I guess it's worth a shot. But man, that is just so gnarly.
Just to die a few hours later by a bomb?
Yeah. Get fucking nuked. But like, I am fairly positive that that monster just absolutely annihilated that building within seconds of them getting out of there. Or something. Like, that thing, it felt like that thing was Jason Voorheesing all over Manhattan.
Just showing up wherever you
now
are.
Now I'm over here.
That monster was just aiming for TJ Miller the whole movie.
I've actually got hold up.
HUD-sucking missile.
That's it.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Surface to HUD missile. Yeah. I laughed. I don't know if it was out loud, if it was one of those internal it made my heart flutter laughs when Jason was standing on a car and trying to talk to them as you got what's his name just talking to what's her name on the phone. Like as the helicopter's there, like, don't stop, keep moving.
That's
and then
a
you
Google
just
map
annihilated
of the monster's pathway through New York City. So you can track where it goes and all of the points in the movie.
What's wild is all of these points, they are within 45 seconds of each other, because that dude was zip zip zooming. Crazy.
He really only goes
up week?
He goes up Main Street. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, all good. Ryan, is it you? Do you have something in store for us next week?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I had an idea, and then Found Footage February threw me for a loop, but you know what? I'm a shitty improver, but I'm going to make it work. Next week we're going to be doing Late Night with the Devil. That is another horror movie, but
sorry, bro,
God, there's only
that's
so many that aren't found
that's
footage.
A lot of
yet.
What the
it's
genre
mostly
is.
What found footage is. And this one's again, 90 minutes, so quick, even if you don't like it. But it's got a really great performance by David Dasmalchian. This is why I asked for pronunciation of names beforehand. Dasmalchian.
I love Dasmalchian.
David Dasmalchian.
Dothrakian.
I always think it's Dalmatian. Like, Dalmatian, and I know there's no L in there, but Dalmatian.
Oh, no. Well, he's really good in it. And it's the first time I think he's been able to be like the main lead, and he runs away with it in, I think, a really fun way.
Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'm excited.
I'm very excited. That one I know I've seen because I saw that one in theaters in the most uncomfortable seats ever.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I won't make it halfway through this and be like, wait a minute. Hold on. But listeners, if you do want to hear me hold on and say, wait, no, yes, go to patreon.com/experiencegrind.
If you want to find out what Sean's saying between the parentheses or after the ellipses.
Oh, dude, I forgot that's what we talked.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Holy shit. That was a good episode.
If you guys want to figure out what the fuck I'm talking about, and Brian and whoever talked, I don't know. Patreon.com/experiencegrind. You can also find that link on the link tree /experiencegrind. Where also you'll have the Discord. Join us there. Have a good time. Yeah, this sense battle, it's continuing on. It's raging. Sometimes I get upset. Sometimes I don't. I don't voice it because who's getting mad over vanilla and orange peel? Me.
There are people. So, yeah.
I've never been more pissed off by sandalwood in my life.
Sandalwood and amber. Like, how am I supposed to fucking choose between the two of those? Light me a candle in either one of those or give me deodorant.
It's a real self choice, yo.
I'm happy. God damn it. Well, Sophie's a bitch.
That's a take.
Wow.
That's a take.
Hey, that certainly was a choice.
I'm just gonna to Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carr my way out of here. Brian, take us out.
Oh, listeners, go film yourself.
Ooh.